everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Carter. He's a Hall of Famer. That is Nick Wright. He's not, but he will be one day. We have
I'm in some Hall of Fames. It ain't the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'm in some Hall of Fames.
He's in some Small of Fames. You are.
Damn.
That's good.
Roasted right first thing in the morning. Yeah. Well done, Jenna Wolf.
Three more hours of that. Still ahead. Two head coaching vacancies were filled yesterday. The Eagles are ready to get revenge against the Saints, but we start this program with one of the more surprising teams in the playoffs this year, the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, at one point this season, the Cowboys were 3-5 with questions swirling about their coaching and quarterback future. A few months later, this same Dallas team notched an opening round playoff win over Seattle. Now they head to L.A. to take on the Rams with a ticket to the NFC title game on the line. And according to Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas has a much higher goal for this season than just beat the Rams. Take a listen.
It means a lot just to accomplish that, especially here at the Dallas Cowboys. It's a prestigious organization. But our goal is not to get back to the NFC Championship, is to get the Super Bowl and win. So, I mean, that'd be cool, but we want to win a Super Bowl.
Well, if you're going to have a goal, it might as well be a lofty one. All right, CeCe, if the Cowboys are going to do this, how will they pull off the upset?
Well, looking at what they're facing in week number two in the divisional round, we know the Rams, their defense, a lot of big names, cornerbacks on the outside who should be able to play a variety of coverages but have specialized in man coverage. So you're expecting Wade Phillips to have a lot of man-to-man coverage and Amari Cooper in the receiving group. But the rush defense of the Rams is very questionable. We know Ezekiel Elliott this season touched the ball 20 times, rushes. They're 7-0. Nick has pointed that out to me. So we know going into the game, he's going to touch the ball at least 20 times. Offense is going to have 65 plays. What is Dallas going to do with the rest of those plays? Now, are they going to throw it to Ezekiel Elliott another 5 times? So now what do they do with the rest of those? Amari Cooper has to have a feature role. If they're going to reach their goals, forget about the Rams or moving forward and everything, Amari Cooper has to set the table for the passing game, but that still won't be enough. It's the others. It's Jarwin, the tight end. It's Michael Gallup, you know, who right now on Dallas's team, he's got 74 targets, only 35 completions. Oof. You're talking about 47%. Now, last week came up with the big touchdown there against the Seahawks, but you need more productivity. Like we say in the playoffs, you're beyond your rookie year now. It's your second year. During your rookie year, yeah, we'll give you some latitude. We're willing to understand a little bit. But now it's time for him to be able to step up. I believe it's important for him and Dak that they can threaten that Rams defense, especially down the field on play action. Michael Gallup, how many receptions can he have out of his targets? He needs to be way above 50%, and he needs to be able to make some big plays down the field. I believe that to be one of the keys if Dallas is going to go to L.A. and come away with the win.
Nick, I'm really glad you focus on the Dallas offense, because I looked at this question focusing on the Dallas defense, because to me, their best path to victory is simulating what they did against Seattle as far as stopping the run. Seattle had the number one rush attack in the NFL, and they had no success, so little success. I was watching the game wondering, man, just stop doing it and start throwing
pass
the
yeah
football, because they were Tyrone Crawford, DeMarcus Lawrence, the Cowboys defensive front, those fast linebackers were stuffing Chris Carson repeatedly. Rashad Penny got the one run, but then he was stuffed immediately on the next play for negative 8 yards. Like, I know Todd Gurley's better than those players, but what can the Cowboys front do to slow down Todd Gurley? And then what can they do? Can they, it's very tough to do this, stop the run and have a good pass rush. Can they get to Goff? Because we know that when Jared Goff has been under pressure, when he's had pressure up the middle, when he's had guys at his feet, he has gotten skittish. We also know that while Zeke can say where our goal is the Super Bowl, Jared Goff's goal is, and the Rams' goal is, man, do not let this thing end in disaster. Last year, it wasn't disaster because it was a surprise that they got to 11 wins. It was nice that they had a home playoff game.
Right. And it was a great story.
It was a great story. And, yeah, they could have beaten the Falcons, and they had a couple special teams miscues that ruined them. But nobody was like, man, Rams choked away their season. Let it happen back-to-back years. Let 11-5 go to 1-done at home in the playoffs, and then 13-3 go to 1-done at home in the playoffs after a bye. And all of a sudden, people start, you know, we're going to talk about Cliff Kingsbury later. Cliff, I think it's good that these guys that are like the young Sean McVays are playing or getting their jobs before this weekend. Because if the Rams lose this weekend, some of that shine might come off the Sean McVay story. Yeah. So I just I think the Cowboys defense has to do what they did against Seattle, in addition to what Chris is saying offensively.
If you look at these two teams, very different record-wise, but two young, semi-hot quarterbacks in their third year, two running backs who are the, probably two of the best in their game, two defenses whose teams have relied on them, have been, for the most part, pivotal parts of their seasons, although the Rams have come up a little bit short. Why have the Rams been so much more successful than the Cowboys?
Well, it's just look at the Rams just have better balance. They have their talent not only dispersed on their offense, but if you look at the players that they have on their defense. So I think that as a team, looking at their roster, and they changed this roster. They made a concerted effort that they were trying to win this year. Dallas, based on since the last 3 years, since Zeke and Dak and them have been there, it's been a slow build. They have some problems as far as the cap. Yep. They're building it the right way, adding a few players through free agency, but mostly homegrown talent. The Rams said, no, man, we're going for it this year. And Ndamukong Suh, trade for Marcus Peters, Tlaib's coming over. Like, we are going to try to win right now. And I respect what they're trying to do. I believe Dallas is going about it the right way. Dallas has had a, with the slow start, I believe they would have had the same type of regular season that we saw the Rams have. But it's about the playoffs now. Right now, if the Rams lose this, Dallas has already had a successful playoff.
Correct.
Because they got the monkey off their back. Dak has a playoff win. Jason Garrett does not have heat on him. Sean McVay and what they're doing, because what they're doing, it's a trial. It's not a program. They're saying, man, we're going to try this. Next year, it might be totally different.
And when you go, I don't want to say all in, because they've signed some of these guys long-term deals. Their best players, Donald, Cooks, Gurley, they have Goff. Mm-hmm. But they did go at least partially all in on this year. One-year deal for Ndamukong Suh. Marcus Peters approaching a contract year. Aqib Talib dealt with injuries the way they went and got him. They are mostly in on this season. This could be their best team for the next couple of years. And by the way, they got to pay Goff soon. So I think that they have more riding on this game than Dallas does, because Dallas, you're right, they're out of the cap trouble they were in. They are building. I want to just clarify one thing you said, because sometimes I feel like you are at a disadvantage because you spend so much time next to me. And so, like, you.
In so many ways.
I understand.
Nick,
but, like,
no idea.
I read your high school yearbook. People have been saying they were at a disadvantage from way back then.
Thank
so go ahead,
appreciate
Jenna. You're,
that, see.
You're right.
But I am more down on Goff than most people. So when most people compare these teams, they don't look at Dak and Goff very similarly, even though they're both in their third year. Most people look at Goff as one of the future star quarterbacks in this league and have questions about Dak. I've been more down on Goff, so I think that's maybe colored your opinion of him a little bit. I think most people look at this game and say, the Rams, why they're 13-3 and the other team was 10-6? One team has an elite-level passing game and the other team does not. I think that's
passing
the biggest
game, maybe, but would you consider Goff a
I wouldn't, but I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I think that where Jenna is the perfect spot, because neither one of these quarterbacks, you can say, can lead a team. Now, the Rams, your wording's correct. They do have a dynamic passing attack, but it's based off of scheme, playing three receivers, play action into the line of scrimmage, and they got either the first or second best running back in the NFL. Yep. So it affects the number of people that can be at the line of scrimmage. But neither one of these franchises right now can say in their third year, you know something? We are satisfied with our quarterback. And if you take away our running game, we feel like our quarterback can drop back 40 times and throw it. So both of these players are at the point in their career where they need a lot of help. They need help. The Rams' offensive line, understated. People don't talk about them. They've been tremendous as far as Goff's growth. So whoever wins this game, it is going to be a huge mark in their favor as far as Goff moving forward, his first playoff win, and these Rams with Sean McVay. And if Dak and Zeke can get through this and Jason Garrett go to the Coliseum and upset them, oh, man, that will quiet a lot of voices as far as those who have been really criticizing them the last 3 years.
I got a lot more things that have affected me from sitting next to you. But, you know what, we'll do that in the commercial break.
No problem.
Take a break. Coming up, two quarterbacks who don't need a lot of help. Andrew Luck, can you take down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs at Arrowhead? That's next on First Things First.
Listen, I know you don't want to hear about it, but 66% of men, 2 out of 3, lose their hair by age 35. When you start to notice hair loss, It's too late. That's why 4Hymns is here to give you the chance at correcting that bald spot or receding hairline before it becomes a real problem. Fact, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Don't become a statistic. Try 4Hymns. Here's your solution. 4Hymns.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Gotta love science. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. You'll get well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. There's no waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. You'll save hours by going to 4Hymns.com. Answer a few quick questions, and the doctor will review and prescribe you the products you need. All products are conveniently shipped directly to your door. It's really that simple. Order now. Our listeners get a trial month of 4Hymns for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4Hymns.com/first. Spell it out now, F-I-R-S-T. That's 4Hymns. FORHYMS.com/first. 4Hymns.com/first.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Chiefs and the Colts in a competitive matchup in just a second. But first, King Suns and De'Aaron Fox. Turns the ball over, doesn't quit, hustles back, gets the block off the backboard.
De'Aaron Fox, do we have a stat, Dusty, for who's appeared in butt first the most this season?
By far.
De'Aaron Fox and Giannis have to be the top two participants so far.
He's having a spectacular sophomore season. A disappointment in his rookie season, Nick, really getting things done for the Kings.
Check out John Collins. Reaches back, catches a one-handed alley-oop.
Oh, that's a difficult grab now.
Yeah, this was outstanding. I was watching this game. The Hawks were giving them trouble.
I was about to say, why are you watching this game? And then I realized, Raptors, your guy, Kawhi.
Well, it's called also doing research.
Doing research. There were a lot of games on last night, see? You didn't have to
That was one of the early ones, homie.
D-Wade connects with Bam Adebayo for the reverse alley-oop.
Bam showed up in the highlights a lot. Bam's got a perfect name for his style of play. D-Wade's still getting it done. Nice little reverse oop.
Yeah, I never liked those uniforms that the Heat wear.
Everyone loves them except for you. These are the single most popular as far as selling uniforms in the league.
Yeah, why pink in a uniform?
It's Miami Vice, man. Go ahead.
1983. Let's move on. Move on
I got some
to
good Miami Vice stories.
Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. Their prize for taking out the Texans last weekend, one of the most dangerous offenses in NFL history, in the Kansas City Chiefs, led by possibly the MVP of the league this season in Patrick Mahomes, at one of the loudest and toughest venues to play, Arrowhead. That's going to be a stinking challenge, said Andrew Luck probably. Both quarterbacks were asked about this matchup yesterday.
It's single elimination. It's an intensity that you have to go into knowing that you got to put your best foot forward. And I mean, we know that. But at the same time, we're going to be ourselves. We're going to do what we've done all season long and try to execute at a high level and try to win a football game.
We're in the same mode we've been in for a while. One, today it's about improving. It's about being 1% better, 1% better, 1% better. And the goal at the end of the week is be 1-0. And you've heard us say that before, and we've lived it. And maybe there's a little more chatter outside, but that doesn't affect how we prepare. It doesn't affect what we do, how we operate. And so the focus has been great so far and will continue to be that way.
When you grow up, you want to go and play games like this. When you get older, you want to be a professional athlete and you want to win on the biggest stage. And so for me, it's about going out there, and like I said, be myself, lean on my teammates and try to go out there and win a big football game.
You know, they're handing out the first 5,000 fans that get to Arrowhead. They're giving out the Patrick Mahomes headbands. To be that guy, to start a game in the playoffs, to know that these fans, they want to look like you, emulate you, it must be such an unbelievable feeling. Nick, I'll start with you. Which of these two quarterbacks we just heard for them do you trust more in this game?
I trust Mahomes more, but that is not a slight on Luck. So let me just say something about Luck, because Luck is a guy that I got really wrong early on. In that I knew what his draft profile was, and he was going towards it. And then after year three, he seemed to get worse and tail off. And I didn't know the extent of his injury, and I was highly critical of him. And now that we see that he's healthy, who he is, the guy he was looking like he was going to be after year three, which is one of the very best quarterbacks in football. So that was something I got wrong on Luck, and this isn't an indictment on Luck at all. But Patrick Mahomes has been the best player in the NFL this year, and he's at home, and the team is the healthiest it's been all season, and he's going to have the fullest complement of weapons he's had absent Kareem Hunt since week one of the season. And I think they have a tactical, as far as schematic edge, with Andy Reid. For all those reasons, I trust Patrick Mahomes, even though it's his first career playoff start. And I know there's a long list of quarterbacks that have struggled in their first career playoff start. One of them who didn't, by the way, is the guy he's compared to the most, Brett Favre. Brett Favre's first career playoff game, not only did he have about a 105 rating, but it ended with a 40-yard touchdown pass to Sterling Sharp in the waning moments of the game to win the game. So the guy who he is modeled after, Tom Bahali said he reminded him of, he had an excellent playoff debut. I trust Patrick Mahomes as much, if not more, than I trust any quarterback in the NFL right now, because over 16 games, he's been the best player in the NFL.
We talked yesterday, though, the thing with Patrick Mahomes is the stage could be a little big for him. He gets a little rattled earlier on in games, right? He struggles a little bit in the first couple series, the first couple plays, even the first quarter. Do you still feel the same way then about both quarterbacks, knowing that one stage will not be too big for one of these quarterbacks?
Well, first, if we're talking about the playoffs, experience has a huge benefit to the players that have it. Now, Patrick Mahomes, it would be fair for us in any comparison that we did, either Phillip Rivers, we have Luck in this game, or Tom Brady. We could argue because Patrick Mahomes is the hottest player, he's been the hottest, and because of what they do offensively, you would trust them more. But experience, to me, is a huge part to this. Andrew Luck made it very, very simple. It's not about all the glitz and glamour. It's about winning this football game, no matter what type of style. And the thing that I know about Andrew Luck is I believe that their style is going to be easier to duplicate how they play and what they want to play going against this Kansas City defense. I worry about Patty Mahomes. I worry about Andy Reid. If they don't, or they aren't able to generate those 35 points, they're going to have problems. Also, you talked about Patty Mahomes. First 5,000 fans, they're going to have some Patty Mahomes. Let me tell you what they need to give out with those headbands. They need to give out first 5,000 barf bags, because those fans are going to be so nervous if the Chiefs get off to a bad start with that defense. I mean, they got one of the worst home playoff histories. That can't be ignored.
That's true.
So you're talking about the worst playoff home history. The quarterback doesn't have any experience. So, yes, I would be naive if I didn't say I was not concerned about Patty Mahomes in his first playoff game and with which team he's playing with, Kansas City, which no team has had worse luck in that first round, divisional round, or when they had home field
advantage. Listen, they haven't won a home playoff game since Joe Montana was the quarterback, and many of those losses have come in historic fashion. One loss that wasn't at home came against Andrew Luck, up 38-10. Up 38-10, and they lose the game 45-44. So I'm acutely aware of the history. But if experience matters, then on the coaching staff side of things, that's a check mark in the Chiefs' favor. I know Andy Reid gets criticized. It should be noted, Andy Reid had a winning record in the playoffs until he got to Kansas City, and Alex Smith went 1-4 with Andy Reid in the playoffs. In Philly, Andy Reid was above 500.
Four NFC title games,
one Super Bowl. Not many instances of one and done with those McNabb, Westbrook teams that we've talked with Brian Westbrook about. And it also should be noted this. Andrew Luck, quietly, and I think it's overshadowed a bit because of the comeback he had against the Chiefs, has not played his best football in his career in the postseason. Andrew Luck, in his seven postseason games, a 73 passer rating, more interceptions than touchdowns. So Andrew Luck hasn't been a guy that we've seen up to this point where he's at his best in the postseason. I thought he was good in the division, in the wild card round, and probably could have been great if they needed him to
be. But see, that's the point. Patty Mahomes, if he's not great, they will lose.
Yes.
See, you said Andrew Luck last week. He will be supported by that running game. This is a Chiefs defense that not have been bad for September. Man, they've been bad for they've been consistent. Four straight months, they've been bad playing football, running and as far as their pass defense. And the way the Colts are set up, where they can run the ball with Marlon Mack. This Chiefs defense has given up over 5 yards a carry. If they run him 25 times, 5 yards a carry, that's a lot of time with Patty Mahomes being on the bench. So that's why I'm concerned about this matchup, is because I believe the Colts can either control the ball on the ground or through the air, which creates anxiety in anyone in the playoffs, let alone Andy Reid, this Kansas City Chiefs team, and a quarterback who doesn't have any experience.
Well, so one thing that we're going to see strength versus strength. As the Chiefs' one strength on defense is their pass rush. And, in fact, since Week 10, they have the second most sacks in the NFL. The Colts, mm-hmm. along that same timeline, have given up the fewest sacks. The Chiefs also, since Week 10, they've got the third most takeaways in the NFL. The Colts have been very good at taking care mm-hmm. of the football. The way to negate some of that time of possession edge Indy should have is if you can get them off the field either via sack or turnover. Chris Jones, D. Ford, Justin Houston are going to have to get home because nobody, no matter how much faith you have in the one seed Kansas City Chiefs, nobody has faith in the back end of that defense.
Yeah, Indy plays typically a Tampa cover two. Play a lot of zone. Watch for Tyreek Hill playing in the slot and Kelsey having a huge day, assault in the middle of that cover two defense. So those things have to happen for the Chiefs and Patty Mahomes to be successful.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, so the Cardinals hired Cliff Kingsbury as their new head coach. But is he the right man for the job? That's next on First Things First. Time for Storrs to start your morning. And we'll get to Cliff Kingsbury in a bit. But the Bucs also filled their vacancy. They hired Bruce Arians. Arians was previously with the Cardinals before spending this past season in the broadcast booth. See, what'd you make of this hire?
I was really happy for this for a number of different reasons. Tampa Bay, one of the rare things they did also was they had a doctor involved that made Bruce Arians take a physical. So one of the question marks with him leaving Arizona was his overall health. He's had some health questions. So I'm glad all that checked out that he could be able to accept this position because I didn't want him being in television if he wanted to coach. He's one of the great quarterback coaches, one of the great play callers, old school football coach. Man, we got these 30-something guys. Hey, let's throw in an old school way we're going to train football players and has a tremendous effect on the offense and on the quarterback. So Jameis Winston, man, this is an olive branch for you.
And, I mean, Arians has a track record of success. When he took over for Pagano in Luck's first year in Indy, going to Arizona, leading them to a great record with Carson Palmer mm-hmm. before the quarterback situation fell apart there. And great staff hire. Reunited with Todd Bowles.
Yes.
So I think this was a win-win-win by the Bucs.
Oh, check out this triangle. Jameis Winston's around. Byron Leftwich is the quarterback coach. And Bruce Arians, who's been a quarterback whisperer long before these Sean McVay guys arrived on the scene.
Speaking of the young guys, seems every offseason the hot name that keeps popping up as an NFL head coaching candidate is Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. But yesterday, McDaniels said, quote, "The book is closed on a head coaching job next season." Nick, did this surprise you?
Not at all. This is what I had been saying, that I did not think he could do what he did with the Colts last year and then this year go interview for jobs. Because if I'm interviewing, and my first question is, so what happened with the Colts, and why is it not going to happen here?
Right, if I offer you this job, will you leave?
Right, even if it goes well and I won't offer you the job, how can I trust you? He made a decision in backing out of that Colts job last year, that if he's going to be a head coach, it's going to be in New England. And so I think he is there until Belichick is not, at least for the time being. So this doesn't surprise me. I think this is the right move.
Well, Belichick went through what Josh could be going through. A long time for Parcells used to tell Belichick, hey, man, I'm done. Yeah. I'm tired. The tank is empty. Yeah. But he kept on coaching. So I believe it's a good thing he went back this year, but I still think it's on the board. NFL owner will hire him as a head coach next year. I believe this is a pivotal offseason in New England with Tom Brady, how long he's going to be able to play, and how long they're going to be willing to commit to him. So I believe this is a good stabilizing move to be able to keep them moving in the right direction.
All right, let's go to the NBA now. Klay Thompson went off last night, 43 points, 7 3-pointers, only 4 dribbles. That and a win over the Knicks. Nick, how scary are the Warriors if Klay is shooting like this?
Well, we know this. When Klay plays like this, they're not beatable. Like, just period, point blank. Boogie's coming back soon. When Klay is on like this, as an example, last night, I know the Knicks stink, but Steph had one of his worst shooting games of the season.
Yes.
And they win by 1,000 points because, I mean, the 4 dribbles and 43 points is comedy. What's he doing? Catch, shoot.
Yeah, that means he's open an awful lot, too.
He doesn't have to get space, anything
right.
like that. So, no, when Klay is on like this, you know that one of Steph or Durant is at least going to be semi-on. No one's beating this team. The only one of the big stories with him that's been underrated with all the drama that we've had from them this year is up until a week and a half ago, Clay had been a shooting slump for the majority of the year. He seems to be breaking out of it.
It's like you get into a street fight with a guy and be like, okay, this guy right here, he's martial arts. Okay, you can't use that. Okay, this guy right here, he's expert as far as guns. And I said, okay, you can't use that. Like, okay, the guy's nice with a knife. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can go a different, a lot of different ways to be able to kill you.
Be a tough street fight.
Definitely.
The old martial arts gun knife expert.
That, now, you know that was straight off the dome.
Oh, yeah. It couldn't have been anywhere else. Yes.
Finally, Zion Williamson put on a show last night, as he does most nights. 30 points, 10 boards, 5 assists in a Duke win over Wake Forest. He's the first Duke freshman ever to put up those numbers. Nick, has Zion asserted himself as the clear number one pick in this year's NBA draft?
I believe so. If your team gets the number one pick, and you do not draft this player, I do not care what your team makeup is. I do not care.
You don't care what you need, where you hold.
I don't care. If your team gets the number one pick and you do not draft Zion Williamson, who is unlike any basketball player I've ever seen in my life, your fans should all declare themselves fan free agents and pick a new team. Listen, his teammate R.J. Barrett is a special player.
Yes.
And in a lot of years would be the consensus number one pick. Mm-hmm. But I know R.J. Barrett, it's like, okay, if everything works out for him, what is his best case scenario? It's like, okay, so is his best case scenario like a James Harden, Paul George hybrid? That'd be amazing player. The best case scenario for Zion Williamson is unlike any player we've ever seen. The best, if Zion reaches his full potential, there is no comp for him because there has been no comp for this athlete in that body. And what I know is the moment he walks to the NBA, he's going to be a top three athlete in the league, an instant impact defensive player because of what he can do flying around the court. He will. I know C is always skeptical of guys that can't shoot. I'll wait on the jump shot. And last night, C, he shot the ball, actually, for the first time all year well.
And wants to be known as a shooter. Doesn't want to just be a dunker, which
exactly
he came
right
out and said this week.
Yeah, I think it's important that now, I remember this. There were some pivotal moments as far as me being a young athlete. I saw a kid playing high school all-star game. He happened to be named Moses Malone. I couldn't believe it. 6'9", 6'8". Like, this guy was dominating. And he was truly the first real high school player to go straight to professional basketball and play at a high, high level. So I saw him, and he was unusual body type, had an unusual game. And I saw Michael Jordan in high school, and I just thought, man, I can't wait to see him play in the NBA game. Now, he did the right thing by going to North Carolina, which developed him as a defensive player. He's able to learn a good system, play with other great players, play on the great stage. I've never seen an athlete like him. I've never seen an athlete like him. And the reason why I don't think Nick is really reaching too far is because he's already doing what you said. I don't want to be known as a dunker. I don't want to be known just as a good athlete. And to have enough confidence to shoot that three-pointer. No, he's not working on his jump shot. He's working on it, but utilizing it already in the game. That right there is something that we've never been able to see. Even if he just improves that little set shot by another 3 feet, it makes him unguardable.
Well, and, keep in mind, in this game, he went 3 for 4 from three. His first three was an air ball. And he was like, no, I'm going to keep shooting. Even though he's shooting like 70% from the field this year, he could put up an unreal stat line averages for the season if he was focused on shooting 75%, which is just, I'm going to do everything within 2 feet of the basket. I'm going to dunk on people. And so the reason I think his shot can develop is he's a 71% free throw shooter. So he's not a player who has a broken free throw the way Lonzo does in the NBA still, the way we're seeing even some Ben Simmons struggle, guys like that can't shoot. And so when I'm trying to grasp, what is his best case scenario? Is it some combination of the best of Charles Barkley in LeBron's body? Is that what we're talking about?
The only reason why I don't compare him to LeBron is because I've never seen an athlete have that type of longevity.
Sure.
So even when I compare the other quarterbacks that are getting older, Drew Brees and him, I still don't compare him to Tom Brady because we've never seen anyone do it like that. But the Charles Barkley and someone else besides LeBron, that's the best. Charles didn't care about his body.
Right.
Obviously, Zion cares enough, and he is a ridiculous athlete. He's definitely one of the 5 best athletes in any sport at this age, that I would have ever seen.
And I'm really glad you pulled on Moses Malone, because people forget that he did go high school to pro basketball. Now it was the ABA, not the NBA, but it was still professional basketball. And people forget that in the early 1980s, in the bridge between Kareem and the Bird Magic era, there was a very brief Moses Malone era where he won three MVPs, an NBA title, and was the – he held that Best Player Alive championship belt briefly, but he held it. Mm-hmm. Moses Malone was a special player. And when you pull names like that, I don't think it's hyperbole, which is why as good as Cam Reddish is, his teammate, as good as R.J. Barrett is,
right,
as good as the kid at Indiana or Bol Bol, who just got injured, unfortunately, Zion, if you have the number one pick, you have a transcendent talent available to you. You have to make it him.
All right, let's get back to football now. The NFL coaching carousel stopped in Arizona yesterday with a move that surprised many. The Cardinals signed Cliff Kingsbury to a four-year deal. Yes, the same Cliff Kingsbury who just got fired at Texas Tech with a losing record. Yes, the same Cliff Kingsbury who just last week was slated to be USC's offensive coordinator, but also the same Cliff Kingsbury who looks like Ryan Gosling. That's not important now. All right, CeCe, what was your reaction to this hire?
My initial reaction was I was surprised because I just have not seen, in the record show over the last 15 years, going back to Butch Jones, leaving Miami.
Butch Davis
leaving Miami, trying to come to Cleveland. And there've been disaster after disaster, college coach or college head coach, and making that transition. Now, in talking to people that I know and respect, and more importantly, the general manager who had a lot to do with hiring him, Steve Keim there in Arizona, he's like, Chris, you would like him. He's a man's man. He can call plays. Imagine this. Because in the NFL, everyone's got the same resources for the most part. Imagine trying to go against Texas and all those big schools with the lack of firepower that he had at Texas Tech. Imagine the budget going against what they were spending compared to recruiting, compared to Oklahoma. And I was like, wow, you make a very, very good point. And he said, I believe that he's a leader of men. He commands attention, and I believe his X's and O's are second to none. So, to me, I had to start doing some research, start calling some people around. So, there are going to be a lot of young coaches being hired, and their ability to be able to communicate, and with this new generation of player, their ability to be able to connect with them. I didn't think too much about that because I've always been by the theory, whoever the coach is, whatever style, the kids will always adapt to them. That's why Bill Belichick and guys like him can always be successful. But we're dealing with a different generation of young people, and I just believe what Steve Keim and some of these organizations are seeing, what Green Bay saw. Because we cannot think that this generation is going to learn and think the same way that we've seen the last decades of players learn. So I'm open to it because the people who I respect and have a high, high football IQ and I have a high opinion of them, they have been telling me about Cliff Kingsbury and other people. So I'm not going to be naive not to listen to the people who I really, really respect.
All right, let me make the case for Cliff Kingsbury on the parts that Chris didn't touch on. He was a coach at the University of Houston when Case Keenum set every college football passing record there was. He then was the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M when Johnny Manziel won the Heisman. He then was the head coach at Texas Tech.
And Johnny Manziel is significant because a lot of that success was predicated on going against Alabama,
yes,
an NFL style. Well, so would it transfer if you had the quarterback?
It was in the SEC in real competition. It wasn't University of Houston against Conference USA and setting those types of records. Then he goes Texas Tech, briefly as Baker Mayfield, I would assume, helps at least some in his development, and has Patrick Mahomes and helps in his development because he was raw. That is the case for Cliff Kingsbury. Another check mark in his favor in my eyes is I am so frustrated watching NFL football with some of the old guard coaching, with some of the it's not about the rushing yards, it's about the attempts. Any new blood to me can be a positive. The case against him for me is a personal one, which is I have been in a position, and you know this, and I don't have to get into the details, where I took a job and I hadn't signed anything, but I took a job verbally, and the next day, the next morning, I got offered what I thought was my dream job. And it was everything, like, if you would have asked me 72 hours prior, describe your dream job, that is what I was offered the next morning. And on that phone call, I said, I appreciate it. I'm flattered. I wish you'd have called me 18 hours ago, but I just said yes to somebody. And you guys, people laugh at me, whatever. Chris poke fun of me about this if they want. I hung up the phone and I cried because I felt like I had, if I had just waited. But I had given someone my word. I was taking a job. And even though I hadn't signed a contract, I couldn't go back on it. I'm bothered that someone goes to Lynn Swann, goes to Helton, the head coach at USC, and gets a job, and 2 weeks later says, maybe there's a better one. I know that people know coaches move and leave, but you're supposed to give them at least a year. That's a part of the Kingsbury thing that, to me, he has to earn that part of your professional character back, because I don't want you to get engaged and then that weekend go hit on somebody new. Like, I give it some time. And that part, to me, he knew NFL coaching jobs were coming open. If he knew this was his dream, he could have waited and not put USC in the position he put him in.
My question to you quickly before we move on is, how do you win over a locker room who knows what your resume is? You got a losing resume, for better or for worse. I understand there were circumstances. But how do those guys fight and believe and get on board with what you're selling, knowing the success or the lack of success you've had?
It's the same way that Dennis Green took over Minnesota after coaching at Northwestern. He wasn't a great success at Northwestern. But we respect the football. When you get in the room, you respect the personality, you respect the mission. Everything that he say is going to be very, very important from the beginning. And from what I hear, the people who have talked to him, they feel confident in moving forward. But what he's going to be judged on is, offensively, can he be effective against NFL defenses? That's what gave Chip Kelly those 2 years. His teams, people don't remember, they won 10 games, they won 10 more games. But you realize the system off the field, it wasn't sustainable. The lack of management of clock time, it wasn't sustainable. Having all these undersized players, it wasn't sustainable. But his ability to be able to score points, that's what's going to give him credibility in that NFL locker room to be able to take over that organization.
And Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals know the number one resource in their organization potentially is Josh Rosen. And they want to, they clearly have made the decision that our franchise is going to go as our young quarterback goes. So we're hiring a coach that we think has gotten the most out of every quarterback he's ever been around.
Right.
It's the other stuff that is, to me, a real question.
Kingsbury better call Larry Fitzgerald and get him to play another year.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would make his rookie season a lot easier having Fitzgerald in that locker room.
Or two or three. Got to take a break. Coming up, Ezekiel Elliott is ready to make a Super Bowl run. You'll hear from him ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Caney joins us.
What up,
we have about a minute by the time you sit down to when we come back from a commercial break. And we always learn something new about Chris Caney. Today's little nugget of news, he was voted most likely to succeed by his high school mates.
Well, that's news to you, Jenna. It's not news to anybody else.
That's a very good point.
I mean, if anybody knows me, they know I was going to hit it big one way or another.
Well, you know.
Just in case this football thing didn't work out, we got other ways to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. That's why he didn't go to a football school.
Right.
Because
he could
get a good academic background at the University of Virginia.
Throughout the show, we'll tell you what all of our senior superlatives were. Kenny, last time the Saints and Eagles played, it was a tale of two cities.
I had a job opportunity I had to get to. I had to break some rules to get there.
Most likely to have a meeting with the FBI.
Me.
By any means necessary.
Sorry, Jenna.
Last time the Eagles and Saints met, it was a tale of two cities. It was the best of times for New Orleans, and it was the worst of times for Philadelphia. Saints won 48-7. But that was then, with an Eagles team riddled with injuries and quarterbacked by Carson Wentz. This is now, where the Eagles are playing their best team ball, quarterbacked by Nick Foles. Jason Peters said the Saints ran up the score on them in the first matchup and, quote, it is definitely not going to be the same outcome this time around. Chris Caney, how much has changed since the Saints dominated the Eagles back in Week 11?
Well, a few things have changed, Jenna. First of all, I'm going to start with the secondary, okay? Remember, the Eagles secondary.
Yeah.
Jalen Mills and Ron Darby, they got injured around the halfway point of the season, and this is that Week 11 matchup when they played the Saints. The Saints put up 373 yards passing and four touchdowns. I think that's in large part because that secondary hadn't had a lot of experience playing with one another. We talk about how important continuity is for the offensive line, but I think the second group on a football team where it's probably the most important is that secondary. So Cravon LeBlanc, mm-hmm. Avante Maddox, Rasul Douglas, those guys have got several games under their belt. And so now I think they'll be in better position to be able to communicate, adjust to what the Saints are throwing at them from a personnel and formation standpoint, and get that part of it shored up so they don't allow the big plays in the passing game. Offensively, the Eagles are going to have Darren Sproles back, and that's huge. If you look at Darren Sproles in that Texans game, being a release valve for Nick Foles, being able to dump it off for a swing pass for a touchdown, Darren Sproles can do that for your offense. And when we're talking about an Eagles offense that struggles to have consistency in the running game, I think you use that short passing game as an extension of the running game. That's going to take some pressure off of Nick Foles, and that's going to allow them to sustain drives. If you look back at that matchup that they had in the regular season, the Eagles didn't get their first down until the Saints already had 17 points on the board. So I think that's going to be important in terms of being able to control the complexion of the game. So those two factors, I think they bode well for the Eagles moving forward.
Well, and you mentioned members of the secondary who had been injured or were not yet fully immersed in the playbook. One guy who was out there and was fully immersed and was ready for what was coming at him and still couldn't handle it was Malcolm Jenkins. And he is also the guy who I think took this game the most personally. He won a Super Bowl in New Orleans. He is one of the most respected guys in the league. He knows Sean Payton. And he was angry with what they were doing at the end of this football game. We know that because he flipped the double birds to the New Orleans sideline near the end of the game. And if bulletin board material matters, if motivation matters, if revenge in sports matters, well, then the Eagles are as amped as any team's going to be for the chance to go play in a conference championship game. Add a little something to that, because they were humiliated. And it was after this game that basically everyone on television, I'll raise my hand first, ended their season for them. That we said, okay, this is when your Super Bowl defense ended. When you are below 500 at this point in the year, you just got humiliated on national television. And we see the gap between the best team in the conference and you. And it is as substantial a gap as you could possibly have. But it's a totally different team now. The pass rush is back. The offensive line is playing like it did last year, except now they do have Jason Peters. Mm-hmm. And the quarterback play right now is better than it was in that game when Carson Wentz had his worst game of his career. Zero touchdowns, three picks, 160 yards. So it is a very – you can take something from the matchup, but I think what the Eagles take from it is the awful taste in their mouth they got. And I don't know if there's many learning points for the Saints from it.
And, CeCe, if you're going to talk about teams changing, the Saints' offense actually got worse over the course of the last couple of weeks. So between the Eagles getting better and shoring up that secondary a little bit and the Saints' offense slowing down, I know their defense has played great, you have much more of a competitive matchup here.
Yeah, all you guys make some great points. Jenna, the most important point, the end of the season, how is this Saints' offense different since that week number 11? They're totally different. Nick talking about as far as revenge, being a motivating factor in these games, it is a motivating factor. And one reason why I believe in this, and I want Chris Canty's opinion because I've seen him be involved in something like this. When you lose the first matchup, you have a competitive advantage going into the second matchup. Is because if you've been embarrassed or humiliated, when you look at the tape, you look at it totally different than they look at the tape. The Saints coaching staff and Sean Payton's going to have a challenge of, wow, if I change anything, because we annihilated them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I change something, then the guys, if it doesn't work, then guys are going to be like, wow, we should change. Why would we change it when we had stuff that worked? Now, from the opposition standpoint, Doug Peterson is going to have no problem getting their attention. Jason Peters, the left tackle, he let us know. Malcolm Jenkins, he let us know. So they are going to have a little extra sauce going into this game. But to me, the equalizer is the Saints rested. The Saints are at home. The Saints do have Teddy Ginn back to that offense who will give them some type of spark. And they have the number one quarterback for me in throwing the football. If it's going to be tight and I need one guy to throw the football, I want Drew Brees. As far as all the guys left in the tournament, I want Drew Brees throwing it. So you guys make good points. Chris, what do you think about that revenge and playing a team that second time? Because you've been involved in a situation like this.
Yeah, I've been involved in a situation like this. The 2011 Super Bowl Giants, I mean, we went on that run in the postseason. But you look at that NFC Championship game, we had a matchup with the San Francisco 49ers out in Candlestick Park earlier in the regular season. And so we knew what kind of game we had to play going back out there for a second time in that season. And in the end of that game, you saw that there was a pivotal third and short. And San Francisco, that team under Jim Harbaugh, they had prided themselves on being a tough, rugged bunch. And we knew that it was going to be a physical ball game. And I think if you look at that third down, when we were able to get that stop, I think that was huge for us in terms of being able to build momentum and actually win that game. We saw something similar with the Dallas Cowboys, understanding the kind of game they had to play against the Seattle Seahawks, because they took an ugly L in Seattle earlier in the regular season this year.
Yes.
And you saw they bounced back, and they played a very physical game, both sides of the ball. I think that's something that bodes well for the Eagles in terms of being able to go in with a certain type of mentality, knowing what kind of game it's going to be, knowing what kind of environment it's going to be in the Superdome.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think the Saints are going to win. Drew Brees has not lost a playoff game down in the Superdome, but I think it's going to be closer,
much
than
closer,
the experts think.
Especially more closer than the first time around, too. Chris, stick around. Coming up, can Andrew Luck take down the Chiefs at Arrowhead? That's next. This is First Things First. To Andrew Luck in the Indianapolis.
Live for an Olympic sport gold medal.
Not true.
I'm the best athlete.
Make
in my
me look bad in front of Canny. That is true. Their prize for taking out the Texans last weekend, one of the most dangerous offenses in NFL history, in the Kansas City Chiefs, led by possibly the MVP of the league this season in Patrick Mahomes, in perhaps one of the loudest and toughest venues to play at Arrowhead. It's going to be a stinking challenge, Canny. That's what Andrew Luck would probably say. Both quarterbacks were asked about this matchup yesterday.
It's single elimination. It's an intensity that you have to go into, knowing that you got to put your best foot forward. And I mean, we know that. But at the same time, we're going to be ourselves. We're going to do what we've done all season long and try to execute at a high level and try to win a football game.
We're in the same mode we've been in for a while. One, today it's about improving. It's about being 1% better, 1% better, 1% better. And the goal at the end of the week is be 1-0, and you've heard us say that before, and we've lived it. And maybe there's a little more chatter outside, but that doesn't affect how we prepare. It doesn't affect what we do, how we operate. And so the focus has been great so far, and will continue to be that way.
When you grow up, you want to go and play games like this. When you get older, you want to be a professional athlete, and you want to win on the biggest stage. And so for me, it's about going out there, and like I said, be myself. Lean on my teammates and try to go out there and win a big football game.
All right, Chris Caney, when you look at these two quarterbacks, they're very different, Andrew Luck and Patrick Mahomes, both very successful, pivotal parts of their team's success this year. But now we're in the playoffs. It's a whole different ballgame. Which of these two do you trust more?
Well, I trust the quarterback that has playoff experience. If you look at this past weekend, wild card weekend, the quarterbacks that didn't have any playoff experience struggled. So, I mean, I think that's important. There's something to be said for that. And this is Andrew Luck's fourth postseason. I think this is his seventh postseason game.
It is.
So, of course, experience matters in these types of situations. You also have to factor in momentum. The Indianapolis Colts have a lot of momentum. They've won 10 of their last 11 games. When you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, December wasn't necessarily the best month. Their last four games, they're 2-2. So I just think that there's the potential for that Kansas City Chiefs team to get off to a slow start. And, Nick, you mentioned it. In all the losses that the Chiefs have had, Pat Mahomes has gotten out to a slow start. So that's one of the things that concerns me. Also, weather is going to be a factor in this game. There's snow in the forecast. So, I mean, you look at this Chiefs offense and you talk about them playing basketball on grass and being one of the fastest, more up-tempo offenses in the National Football League. Bill Parcells used to say a cold player is not a fast player. So it'd be interesting to see how that offense reacts and responds under those conditions. I feel like the Colts, they have more ways they can win offensively than the Kansas City Chiefs. I like the consistency with them being able to run the ball, provide balance with Marlon Mack. Both teams, both offensive lines do a great job of keeping the quarterbacks upright, but I just feel like the Colts have more dimensions to their offense than the Chiefs at this juncture.
Right. I believe that the Colts, I think you make a great point, too, as far as Patrick Mahomes, what is he going to have to assist him? Like, we don't know. We don't know with Andy Reid if they're going to run the football. And if we just know that Patrick, they're just going to be one-dimensional. They're going to throw the football. Now, they got the best receiving core and quarterback combination in the league. But if the weather's bad, if it's windy, if the game is slowed down to a pace less than those 35 points, is he able to be patient enough? So, yes, those seven games of playoff experience, they do come in. But I know that the Colts are going to run the ball. And more importantly, I know the Chiefs are going to give up 5 yards a carry. So for me, the reason why I can say I would lean towards Luck is because I believe he's going to have more help that I know. I don't know about Andy Reid. Andy Reid will come out the first quarter, first half, and they'll have 10, 12 rushing attempts. I'll be like, okay, that's what Patty Mahomes needs. But there's a case to be made for the hottest player in the NFL that's supported not only by play calling, but by how they're going to attack a defense. There's a case for Patty Mahomes going with the hottest player and them being rested and them potentially being the best team in the NFL.
Listen, I saw this one, this narrative stream coming 2 weeks ago when I said then, and I think it's being proven out now, no matter who the Chiefs drew in this round, if it was the Ravens, a team that went to Arrowhead and nearly beat them, mm-hmm. the Chargers, the only team to go to Arrowhead and beat them.
Yes.
Or a red-hot Colts team, that the hot upset pick of the weekend was going to be whomever against the Chiefs. Because the playoff history, as far as the team, terrible playoff history at home is a real thing. And the lack of playoff experience for the quarterback is a real thing. But despite the lack of experience, Pat Mahomes didn't have experience at anything going into this year. Put up the third greatest quarterbacking season ever. The Chiefs offense as a unit had never been together like this. Put up the third highest scoring season ever. And at Arrowhead this year, they lost one game. And that game, they had a 14-point fourth-quarter lead, and they lost it on a 2-point conversion with 4 seconds left. So color me as someone that says the Colts do a lot of things really well. They are not as good as the Chiefs. They do not have home field advantage. They do not have a coaching edge in this game, and they do not have a quarterback edge in this game.
Are you not concerned about their defense?
I don't think there's a team you can play in the divisional round that doesn't bring a lot of concerns. I think everyone left is good. I think no matter every matchup, there are things that would concern me, right? No matter what team you're talking about, there are teams the opposition brings. There's no dead ducks left playing in this round. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think the Colts have a good defense. I think their ability to keep Andrew Luck upright when the only thing the Chiefs defense does well is attack the passer, mm-hmm. that's a concern. But if the Colts are going to come to Arrowhead and win, barring a blizzard, because mm-hmm. I know there's some snow in the forecast, but I don't know how torrential of a downpour torrential snow. Barring horrible weather, you want to come to Arrowhead and win, go score 38 points. I think that's what you're going to need. This Chiefs offense going to put up their 35. I believe that. I know we're coming off a playoff weekend where no one broke 25. I believe this Chiefs offense
and NFL history would say that the best offenses, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. I happen to be on one of those offenses. We were high-flying. Yep. Man, two times we didn't score more than 27. Those are the only two games that we lost that season.
But we're not to the Super Bowl yet, right? I mean, that team was a field goal away from making the Super Bowl.
But this Colts team is better than the teams you would typically be facing in the divisional round. And I just, Nick, you cannot time a possession.
Yes.
And when you lose that in the playoffs, all right, we know the Chiefs will turn the ball over. Now, if you tell me, man, Damian Williams is going to run the ball, I've been like, okay, the Chiefs are going to be tough to beat. But we don't know what Andy Reid is going to do. We don't know if they're going to have some balance. And we don't know if Patty Mahomes in a tight, back-and-forth playoff game that he can matriculate and make chess moves with one of the better quarterbacks. Andrew Luck, 39 touchdowns on the season, even though people have not noticed.
Yeah, and the other thing to that, CeCe, and we talk about that division loss that the Chiefs had at home against the Chargers late in the season, they had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter.
Yes, they did.
And it was a situation where they couldn't sustain drives. They couldn't close out the game. With their 4-minute offense. They couldn't. And he took a sack on that drive. You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm just saying Pat Mahomes and that offense, they could not close the door on that Chargers team. They allowed them an opportunity to get back in the game.
There should always be question marks when you've never done it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Why should we believe that someone is just going to run through? We saw the offensive output in the NFL. Man, astronomical. The numbers, September, October. I told them November, they started to slow down. Yep. December, they slow. Now they're down to the football game has changed. Can Kansas City play the same style, 35 points a game, in the postseason? Because if they're able to do that, that is hard to match.
And you were proven 100% correct about that. Wait till the weather changes and see if everyone's still scoring 40. Mm-hmm. And that has been proven out. And the first weekend of the playoffs was a great example of this, where no one could score 25. See, this is the stat you had yesterday. Mm-hmm. September through November, games 48 points per game. December, 43. January, including this postseason, down to 36. You see the passer rating dipping. I get all of it. I don't think that the reason that I have confidence in the Chiefs more than most is not only home field and rest, but they aren't just a 2018 really good offense. They're the third highest scoring offense in NFL history. The previous two didn't win the Super Bowl, but they got there. 07 Pats, 2013 Broncos. They didn't win it, but they didn't lose a home playoff game either. They got there.
I don't think anyone's doubting whether Patrick Mahomes is capable of an offensive, you know, absolutely, at any level, at any game. But I think it's what you brought up earlier this week. There's a difference, Chris Candy, between winning a point and wowing a point. Winning a drive and wowing a drive. Getting the 3 yards to get a first down and stay on the field and drive your team down the field, or trying to go for the big play, the big home run play, because the whole entire stadium is going to be there with the atmosphere, and it's going to be snowing, it's going to be crazy, and the energy, and you wonder if that's going to get to make him want to always go for the big wow play and not just win the point. I think that's where a little bit of the experience comes into play.
No, you're absolutely right, Jenna, and this Kansas City Chiefs team is led by their offense, and you know that the defense is one of those areas where they're shaky at, so that's why I put so much emphasis on this Chiefs offense being able to close the game out late when they have a lead, because you know that if they leave the door open for Andrew Luck and that Colts offense, that going up against that defense, there's the potential that they could make the plays and put themselves in a situation where they can win the game. So that's why I worry about this Kansas City Chiefs team at home with no playoff experience under your starting quarterback's belt.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.